All right. Now I'm going to do it, and I have to do it quickly because it would be unfair on you to do it slowly. The consecrated life. All right? And I'll just do this now. Christ proposes the evangelical counsels in their great variety to every disciple. Counsels meaning advice or invitations to sanctity, quite apart from what you can't do and can do. This is an invitation to live a full Christian life. The perfection of charity, to which all the faithful are called, entails for those who freely follow the call to consecrated life the obligation of practicing chastity in celibacy. Everyone's called to practice chastity. Chastity means loving well and purely in whatever lifestyle you have. Well, this is chastity in celibacy, that is, not with a sexual partner. For the sake of the kingdom, and then poverty and obedience. These have been classically, right from the beginning, the three evangelical counsels that have attracted people and still do. It is the profession of these counsels within a permanent state of life recognized by the church that characterizes life consecrated to God. Now, we're all consecrated to God, eh? So it's hard to find a specific term, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Okay. Now, the Catechism, and I won't talk about these here, talks about hermits. It talks about consecrated virgins. Women it's talking about, I don't know why only women, but anyhow, who take a vow of virginity and in the world, and still Lynn might be a district nurse or something, but they've taken a vow of virginity. But they haven't joined other nuns in a convent or anything. Then it talks about religious life, which I'm going to talk about with you, with its public profession. So at the age of 17 and a half, I made a public profession of poverty, chastity, obedience. Then you can't take a final vow till you're 21. So I renewed my vows in April, whatever year it was, 50-something, because I wasn't quite 21 yet, and then I made my final vows on my 21st birthday. And it was public profession, so that, and the common life. There are secular institutes, commitment to values but not vows, and I'll talk about those in a moment, and then there are what's called societies of the apostolic life. Now, this is just a list for your interest. I've gone through the stud book, I call it, but it's got to have a better word than that. It's the list of all the different orders and that in their phone numbers and everything in Australia. Now, on that list are the institutes of clerical religious that are actually existent in Australia. Some of them have got hundreds in them. Some of them might have 10, you know, members. But just in Australia, you've got the African Mission Fathers, the Antonine Monks, the Augustinians, the Benedictine Monks, the Blessed Sacrament Fathers, the Camillians, the Capuchin Franciscan Friars, the Carmelite Friars, whether discalced or calced, the Cistercian Monks, the Claretians, the Divine Word Missionaries, the Dominicans, their Franciscan Friars, the Jesuits, the Lebanese Maronites, and the two lots of those, the Legionnaires of Christ, the Marian Fathers, the Marist Fathers, the Missionaries of the Sacred Heart, you can all cheer. The Norbertine Canons, the Oblates, the Orders of Friars Minor, Conventual, the Palatines, Passionists, Pauline Fathers, Paulists, Redemptorists, Resurrection Fathers, Salesians, Salvatorian Fathers, Scalabrinian Fathers, Servite Friars, Society of Christ, Society of St. Paul, and the Spiritans. I might have missed one or other, but that's... Now, there's little boys somewhere in Australia have joined all those groups, and they're acting for the church now in Australia. There's a lot of them. So... Then the brothers, that is laity now, because they're not in the hierarchical system, they're not orders, they're lay people who've gathered together as men or women for the service of the community. We've got the Christian Brothers, the De La Salle Brothers, the Marist Brothers, the Patrician Brothers, and the John of God Brothers, doing wonderful work for the education, teach, etc. Then when you get to the sisters, now... I've got two pages of these, but it won't hurt to run through them, just for the record. So girls somewhere have gone to a convent and saw and thought she was lovely, and they've done all this, and they're still working in the church in hundreds, thousands. The Adoration Sisters, the Antonine Sisters, the Augustinian Sisters, and there are three lots of them. You might have a daughter. The Basilian Nuns, the Benedictine Nuns, two lots of them. Blessed Sacrament Sisters, Brigidines, Canossian Sisters, Carmelite Nuns, Cenacle Sisters, Charity, Sisters of Charity, Cluny Sisters, Compassion Sisters, Daughters of Divine Zeal, Daughters of St. Paul, Dominican Sisters, four different lots, all in different convents with their own system, depending on where they came from, Family Care Sisters, the Faithful Companions of Jesus, Franciscan, four lots, Good Samaritan Sisters, Good Shepherd Sisters, Handmaids of the Lord, Holy Sisters of the Holy Angels, Holy Faith Sisters, Holy Family Sisters, Holy Spirit Sisters, Little Company of Mary, Maria, Little Sisters of Jesus, Little Sisters of the Poor, Loreto Sisters, Marist Missionary Sisters, Marist Sisters, Maronite Sisters, Mercy Sisters, Missionaries of Charity, Missionary Sisters of Service, Missionary Sisters of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Missionary... There's all these wonderful women around the place. I don't know how many of them in this room, but they're all there working in the church, working... I've got something to tell you about that in a minute. Mission Sisters of St. Peter Claver, Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart, and the MSC Sisters are our sister order. Sisters of Nazareth, the Our Lady of the Sacred Heart Sisters, also a sister order of the Missionary of the Sacred Heart. Our Lady Help of Christians, Our Lady Nurses of the Poor, Passioner Sisters, Pastorelle Sisters, Poor Clares, three lots of them. Presentation Sisters, Redemptorist Deans, good on you, Mary. Religious of the Sacred Heart, there we are. Resurrection Sisters, Salesian Sisters, Servite Sisters, Zion Sisters, Sisters of Disciples of the Divine Master, Sister of Adorers of the Blood of Christ, Sister of Charity of St. Anne, Sisters of Our Lady of the Missions, Sisters of St. John of God, Sisters of up in the Kimberleys, working of their hearts out up there, Sisters of St. Joseph, four lots of them, taught me as a little boy and taught me beautifully. Sisters of St. Paul of Chartres, Sister Servants of Mary Immaculate, Tyburn Nuns, Ursuline Sisters, two different groups. Now, I've run through groups of men and women. They're all working in the Church of Australia. But in 1992, and this wasn't at the height of it all, there were 16,000 religious in Australia working, living, praying. 16,000, that's 14 years ago. Today there are 8,000. Halved in 14 years and aging. So I just, whatever's happening, it's big, and every little religious order doesn't have to look at itself and think if we were living better, something different would be happening. Well, I mean, we'd like to say that. I belong to a religious order which I actually think is quite fantastic. I actually think it's right in touch with the modern world. It's got a spirit that's very attractive and does attract people. You know, all of this, and if I looked at other missionaries and that I know in Australia, they're the top people, in my view. Like, they're really, really good people. We had 70 students for the priesthood when I was in the seminary. Today we have one, and you know him, Peter Hendricks, worked in our parish a couple of years ago. 71. We haven't stopped wanting to educate. We haven't stopped searching. We haven't stopped living. We haven't stopped relating to the world. Do you get me? So it's not a bad... We're not kind of bad people all of a sudden. We're dealing with a massive, quick, sudden change. Boys of my age 50 years ago, girls of my age 50 years ago, one of the options that was before everybody in Catholic home was becoming a priest or a brother or a sister. It was there, it was a possibility. And they knew young priests or young brothers or young sisters that really attracted them, you know? The young brothers, young priests, young religious are basically not present anymore. So how do the young get attracted? No one's going to look at me with grey hair and think, gee, I'd like to be one of those. It just doesn't work like that. Psychologically, but there's a whole lot of other reasons too. All I'm pointing out to you is there's a massive change in the church's life, and in 14 years' time, that 8,000 will be 2,000, 1,000, and aging. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a very big shift in... But the other thing to say is, not since 1992, but since I was first ordained, I'm now in a parish where there are hundreds of people ministering. Hundreds of people ministering, and when I was first ordained, I counted the money, I basically did everything. You know what I mean? So it's much better now, but we're going to wake up one day soon and suddenly realise, wow, with all those nuns that were working so beautifully for the age and are still now coming into a third job in their life and they're older than anyone present in this room and they're still going around the suburb, sitting with the sick, nursing, caring for them, you know, speaking beautiful words to them. And they're, you know, all the nuns, I've given plenty of retreats to nuns and they all seem to me to be, not all, you know, but basically absolutely fantastic people and very attractive older women. They've got no little sisters coming. It must be hard. hard for them to feel. You know, it's lovely to be handing on your thing to young women or young men, and so there's a lot of suffering in the church, and yet this is a heroic life going on. And I just think you need to be aware, if you're not already aware, of this dramatic change. And I don't know the answer. I don't know anyone who does know the answer, but we're all still... You're not allowed to die. You just stay alive as long as you can, but there's something big happening here. And there's secular institutes also working in Australia. They're not religious now, but they're the Missionary of the Kingship of Christ, Society of Christian Doctrines, Schoenstatt Fathers, the Schoenstatt Institute for Diocesan Priests, Schoenstatt Sisters of Mary, and the Servitum Christi. There are societies of the apostolic life, the Columban Fathers, the Daughters of the Charity of St. Vincent de Paul. They're not religious, but they're a society of apostolic life. Leaven of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, the Mill Hill Missionaries, the Oblate Apostles of the Hearts of Jesus and Mary, the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter, the Verbum Dei Missionary Fraternity, and the Vincentians. So, what I've... Opus Dei was a secular institute, you would call it, but they've got colossal power for reasons I don't understand, and they've become a personal prelature of the Pope. So they're actually on their own. They've been given special by John Paul II, taken outside canon law and given a special direct connection with the Pope. And there's opinions on that. Of course, the Opus Dei would be delighted. There'd be others who would wonder what's going on. So they're a very strong... In Spain, they were founded, as you know. And, so they've obviously got a role in the church, yeah.
They're one of the churches in communion with Rome.
Anyhow, they have a degree of independence of the bishop and of canon law, which a lot of canonists would wonder how wise that is. But they do. They might there. Yeah.
Their mission statement.
Yes, the ideals of the Opus Dei, for example, and of other, and this is what seems to be the way the church is moving towards secular institutes, because it involves the clergy who have come up within the ranks of it. But basically, and there's an inner group of people who have vows of chastity and so on. Then there's the wider group of men. So it's a wide grouping of people. In fact, in our own order, and this would happen with a lot, I suppose, Missionaries of the Sacred Heart, we were founded in 1854 by Jules Chevalier. Now, his plan right then, in 1854, was quite big. He wanted priests, he wanted brothers, he wanted religious sisters, he wanted diocesan priests to be an arm of the society, while they're still diocesan priests, and he wanted lay people to be MSC, Missionaries of the Sacred Heart, as lay people. So he had a very big vision for that the Spirit, and he was teaching at a time when, well, he just wanted to reach the ordinary people. He lived in one of the poorest parishes in Issoudun in France, and in fact he was there for 50 years and more. He died there. So he was a parish priest all his life in one little part. But it was a very poor area, and the church had lost the workers because the church was basically backing the kings. You know, it was a very hierarchical thing, and it suited them to have kings to deal with rather than people. So it was pretty anti-republican and all that complicated stuff. So the church had kind of been lost. He wanted to re-win the people by showing them God's love. So he had this big vision, but the order quickly went into priests and brothers and nuns.